Tom Slemons with me. He's talking about all things mysterious.
Good afternoon, Billy.
Hi, Tom.
Just before I do talk about UFOs, well, your producer Steve passed in a note here that's very interesting. It just says Pat from Crosby, if she's listening, and she's talking about orange lights that were seen in the sky.
When?
Crosby. I think it was yesterday, 5 p.m. and 10 p.m.
Well, isn't Crosby a hotspot, as we call it in the business?
Window area, it's called.
UFOs?
Yeah. And nobody knows why, whether they're coming through from somewhere like a portal or another dimension. I haven't got a clue. But that's one of the hotspots, one of the windows is Crosby. But I believe Steve was saying they have something on Facebook now regarding this. And it went mad last night, he said, all these reports. So if anyone... want to get in touch over that? I'd love to wear any, you know, any...
Okay, orange lights over Crosby last night. Anybody else see them?
Yeah, that'd be nice to hear about that. On the subject of UFOs, I think most people who have heard about Roswell in 1947, in which a spacecraft is supposed to have crashed into the sands in New Mexico, then we'd retrieve bodies and all this, and closer, you know, in this neck of the woods, going back to the 23rd of January 1974, there was another... case that's becoming more and more well known now, the Berwyn Mountains crash.
It's in Wales, isn't it?
Yeah, in North Wales. It was just seen right across the region as lights in the sky. Next thing you're somewhere in the Berwyn Mountains, there was an impact, and when the police got there, they were warned off by the army. You know, it's a funny thing to think about, the police actually being warned away by a higher authority, and then the army cordoned off the hillside, and what they found, it's raged for years, you know, whether it was a spaceship and a fighter plane. But there's another one that it doesn't get much mention. I believe the National Archives are due to release some stuff, possibly next year. This is in 1981. A fishing trawler named the Celerity vanished without a trace in the Irish Sea. And this was in broad daylight. No wreckage of the trawler was ever found. And then after this, another vessel called the Sherilga was sunk in the same area. The official explanation, he said, was a nuclear sub called the HMS Porpoise. I've been doing manoeuvres, and the trawler had got a net snagged on the sub and dragged underwater. This went on and on. There was one called the Crimson Dawn. This was another trawler not long after that. She was pulled under by something, and it goes on and on. This catalogue of accidents in this one area of the Irish Sea. Also, it fringes onto Liverpool Bay, where this activity was going on. People saying, what's going on? What's causing all these trawlers to be pulled beneath the waves? And there was another ship called the Galvanor that disappeared beneath the waves with its crew of eight. And over in Ireland, on the Isle of Man, there was an organisation, a pressure group, very concerned, called the Celtic League, compiled a dossier of all these bizarre incidents, said to the government, what's going on, you know? And it leaked out that when I say UFO, people think it's got to be from another planet. It could be one of our own man-made things, you know, warplanes or something that haven't been released to the public. But an unidentified flying object was seen to crash into the Irish Sea around this time. The Echo even reported it. On the Isle of Man, people actually saw this light hitting the water. It was seen all across the north coast of the Wirral, Crosby, Southport, even as far afield as Dublin, Anglesey. All reports agreed, they said, that a huge bright light was seen to fall almost in slow motion, much too slow to be a meteorite, out of the starry skies. He said it landed in the Irish Sea, and a Belgian vessel at that time was near to the impact site, and the crew said they saw an enormous wheel about 300 feet in diameter. One of them said it was almost like a Ferris wheel, and it was dotted with lights, and it came crashing down into the water. The tidal wave it threw up nearly capsized the ship. The ship to shore radio died. The ship's generator failed for half an hour. And then that week, they said they saw these mysterious green circular lights under the waters of the coastline of the northwest. And two were even seen in the Mersey. There was a thing in the Echo about it saying, what are these green lights in the Mersey? And they asked the Ministry of Defence. And even one followed the ferry on its last trip across the Mersey one night. The ferryman saw it, passengers and everything, said he could see this thing. It's as if these little UFOs called USOs, unidentified submersible objects, had actually come off this main one. So in the end, the Echo and a couple of other papers actually went to the MOD and said, look, we've got reports that something's going on in the Mersey. Around this time, people on the Isle of Man said they saw a light emerge from the waters of the Irish Sea. It flew upwards until it was out of sight in the clouds. And once again, they asked the MOD, you know, what's going on there? Is the Polaris-type missile being tested out? And an MOD spokesman said, we can't really comment on the area, but there are no subs in the area, even though people had seen submarine conning towers. So what it seems to be, Billy, is that something crashed into the Irish Sea about 1981,
What you were saying about there was Russian...
Yeah, well, these reports came in then. There was a military magazine actually got a... They actually went to the printing press down in London and stopped it. It was all warm, called War Machine or something it was. Talking about all these new weaponry, you know, like the stealth bomber, the early stealth bomber was coming out at that time. And they mentioned this, and they said somebody in Russia was telling them, off TASS news agency, said something has crashed there. And then there was a little piece printed in The Guardian, and it said there's Russian submarines in the area. And the Ministry of Defence did say they're allowed within so many nautical miles of the coast in international waters, but not supposedly in the Irish Sea. So what was Russian subs looking for? NATO subs, and all in this one area where they saw this thing crash. So the only thing that, you know, ufologists could gather was that maybe something had crashed in and they were trying to retrieve it. Open maybe, if it's a higher technology, if it is from another planet, they could use the technology, you know, in defence and so on. But nothing seems to have become of it. It seems that this thing took off again. But what it was doing in the Irish Sea, or whether it was just exploring this planet, I don't know. But there might be someone out there who remembers that.
Okay.
So just in the hope that might...
I can remember that being referred to in readers' letters in the Echo as well,
yeah,
about a UFO being in the Mersey.
And the trawlers getting pulled under the Irish Sea must be terrifying.
Always reminds me of the beginning of Walt Disney's 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, because that showed the green eyes heading for the ship underneath the water.
Yeah.
Always reminds me of that.
Travel. BBC Radio Merseyside.
Back with Mrs. Butler's eldest and my guest, Tom Slemon. Tom, we've had few people on the phone to Steve who have seen these orange lights over Crosby. We'll have some on the line in a moment. First of all, Tom, what's wrong with my old collegiate cap?
This is a lovely story. This is in 2002. 64-year-old man named Alan was working in his garden in Nottingham. His wife Millie came to him complaining of stomach pains, and Alan told Millie, "It's just wind." She said, "It doesn't feel like wind. Felt as if stomach's bubbling." That's how she described it. Anyway, she decided to go home and have a lie down. And at tea time, Alan barged into her bedroom, selfishly asking where his tea was. And Millie lay there without answering. Her face was white. She didn't seem to be breathing at all. The woman's stomach was in turmoil. It really did sound as if it was making a bubbling sound. He shook his wife. There was no reply. He called an ambulance. But when they arrived, the paramedics told him that Millie has died. She died from a burst pancreas. That's one of the symptoms of bubbling stomach. The shock of losing his wife of 30 years gave Alan a stroke. He ended up at Progrim Hospital, half paralysed, slipping in and out of consciousness. He wasn't expected to live more than a week or so. And all this took place just days before Christmas. And he woke up, Alan, this Christmas morning to see his younger brother, Philip, who come all the way up from Devon to pay a bedside visit. And he brought the usual grapes, Lucozade, little presents and all that. And flowers. And Philip told Alan, he said, "Someone's left a Christmas present here at the bottom of the bed, the hospital bed. It was wrapped in real cheap, thin holly and ivy paper. There was no card or label attached." And Philip opened the present. He saw it was an old Liverpool collegiate cap, size 6 7/8. And Alan squinted at the cap and smiled lopsidedly because of the stroke. That's my old cap," he said to his brother, and he tried to reach out for it, and Philip handed him the cap, and after examining it and scrutinising the badge on the cap, which I'm sure you can remember, he recalled the motto of the collegiate, which was, because he attended this from 1949 to 1954, I think it said, "Not only the intellect, but also the character," he muttered, quoting the motto, and with his good hand he put the cap on his head, and he recoiled as his body went into a spasm. He said everything went brilliant white in the room. Alan wasn't in Broadgreen now, and Philip and his wife had gone. Alan was standing before the headmaster, Mr. Croft, as he must have been like about 14 or 15, in the Liverpool Collegiate on Shaw Street, and he said he felt younger, smaller, lighter. He looked around the study of the headmaster, who was talking down to him in the stern voice. He said morning sunlight was streaming through the windows of the headmaster's study, and he was saying, "Are you listening, boy?" in a strict voice, and suddenly Alan was back in the ward at Broadgreen. His brother had removed the cap from Alan's head, and he said, put it back on. He kept snarling to his bewildered brother. His brother looked at his wife and then placed the cap back on his head. I think he was nuts, you know. Immediately Alan found himself in the gymnasium with the PE instructor. He reckoned it was a fellow called Mr. Hanley, supervising the class as they all did press-ups. And Alan stopped exercising, looked to his right, and he said there was his best friend. This is a fellow called Jim, would later die in the 1980s from a heart attack. And yet here he was, in his early teens, all rosy cheeks and full of life. And he said, "Jim, is that you?" Alan asked his best friend, and Jim smiled and looked sideways during the push-ups. "Stop messing about or Tommy Andley will kick off," the boy replied. Alan Appley did the press-ups, and after the lesson was over, he talked at length to Jim about the time and the date, and Jim kept asking him if he was feeling all right. He said, "I'm all confused, Jim," Alan said to him, and he ran off and explored the collegiate. He said he saw all the familiar faces. I think he said something about an English teacher. I'm almost certain he said Woodward or something, who told him to stop running. And then Alan was back in the hospital ward. His brother and sister had long gone, and the doctor stood there with a bemused grin, with the collegiate cap in his hands. That's my old cap," Alan cried, and he grasped at the air, trying to reach for it. He was now addicted to these strange trips into the past, and the doctors believed the episodes were hallucinations due to the stroke. But Alan swore he was really able to visit his old school days when he wore the cap. And as the weeks went by, Alan's condition improved in an unprecedented way. He told the specialists and the doctors and the nurses it was because of this old collegiate cap. And a neurologist said, "Oh, the cap, it's just a catalyst of some sort of nostalgic therapy," whatever that means, you know. And within a month, Alan had regained the use of his left hand, his leg, and he put it all down to the days he'd spent in the gym. He said, "With this Mr. Handley, the PE teacher, whoever he was, and at the collegiate." And Alan somehow believed the cap had opened up a door into the past. Of course, no one's going to believe this. No one in the hospital could take it seriously. They thought it was just a psychological condition. And then, unfortunately, he said, on New Year's Day, 2003, the old collegiate cap literally vanished from a kitchen table in his home. He was there 1 minute. It was gone the next. He looked into every possibility. His brother never left it there for him or anything. He couldn't work out where it come from. And he said to me, "You know, they say laughter, you know, maybe the best medicine." He said, "But I tell you what, nostalgia, it's like a sort of cure-all." He said, "And the journey into the past may be the best panacea of all." He said, "Just the nostalgic." Now, it could be just the effects of the stroke. Yeah. But I've got cases on record, Billy, where people have had stroke, and it's opened up sort of new avenues in their mind. They've become very sensitive psychically, you know, having strange dreams of premonitions. And psychometry, where the old objects, and they feel as if they can read, you know, who previously owned, I think. But I don't know. I mean, it's...
Interesting. Okay, a few people on the line, Tom. It's all about the Crosby sightings. Christina. Hello, Christina.
Hiya, Billy.
Hiya, love you. Through to Tom Slemon.
Hello.
Hi, Tom.
Hello there.
Hiya. Yeah, I seen them about 10 o'clock last night.
Oh,
okay.
They
were, it was like two lights.
Yeah.
They were further apart than I'd say, you know, like, it definitely wasn't an aeroplane.
Yeah.
And I seen them about five times. They sort of came from the top and then, you know, sort of were coming down.
Mm.
And then they'd disappear, and then they'd start at the top again and come down.
And no noise or anything?
No, definitely no. Yeah, I never heard anything.
Where about was this, without giving where you live exactly?
I'd say I'm about, say, a 10, 15-minute walk from, the beach.
Yeah.
And it was definitely over the Mersey.
Yeah.
Definitely over that way. And by, I'm in Crosby near, I'd say between... I'm just trying to think now where I'm near. I'm in Woodville Avenue, actually. That's the name of the road.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
I'll look into that one.
Yeah.
We're getting loads of reports of these orange lights. Some of them are stationary, others are moving around in formations. And
Well, I'd say it was moving, and then they'd disappear, and then it'd come back, and then it'd do it again. And it was about five... I'd say I'd seen it about five times.
Yeah.
And it was 10 o'clock when I seen them.
And as far as you're concerned, Christina, it was strange. It was like something you'd never seen before, was it?
You know, like, say, if you looked up and you've seen an aeroplane, yeah. The lights look like, say, the size of a star, don't they? And this was, say, like, the size of an orange, you know, that you were looking at. Yeah, and quite bright, I'd say, quite bright orange.
That's great.
Okay, thanks, Christina. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks.
You know you can buy these Chinese lanterns now, can't you, Tom, which you set fire to and let go into the
sky?
That's
right, Billy, yeah. It's just
we saw one of them over our garden, and I thought it was UFO at first.
Yeah, I would zoom. I've got a camera, and I would zoom right in, and you can see them, like the little flickering flame. But these are a bit different. Like you said, the size of an orange. Some of them look spherical when you zoom in with a camera. And I don't know whether it's ball lightning, natural phenomenon, or whether it's something intelligent.
Okay, well, Val's on the line from Heighton. Hiya, Val.
Hiya.
Hiya, through to Tom.
Hi, Val.
Hello.
What did you see?
It was either last Thursday or Friday evening at 6:02.
I'd just taken the dog out in the garden so he could spend his penny, and I was standing there, and I thought it was a police helicopter coming over.
Yeah.
It was about the usual height, you know, and it was just bright orange, and it was quite big, you know, like the size of like the helicopter would be, but it had all flames in the front of it.
Flames.
But there was no noise, like that other lady's just said.
Yeah.
And it, I knocked on the window, and my husband came out, and he saw it. And then it sort of, I live not far from Pilch Lane, between Malvern Avenue and Pilch Lane. So it was coming in that direction. And then it just veered over towards Runcorn Speakway, you know, sideways it went.
Yeah, going southeast, yeah.
Yeah, and then it just sort of petered out. So my husband phoned the police right away and asked them. You know, they recorded the call, and they'd heard nothing. So we just sort of been waiting. And now my friends just phoned me and said, because I was talking to her the other day, and she said that you were on. So, you know, I gave you a ring.
Oh, that's brilliant.
But this was like either last Thursday, Friday. I can't remember the exact date, but the police have got the date.
Just after 6 o'clock,
2 minutes past six,
So this wasn't one of those Chinese lanterns?
I've never seen one. I don't know what they are like, you know. I've just heard you say that, and I don't know.
Yeah.
It was...
they've been seen all over. They've seen what you mentioned in Pilch Lane, Malvern Avenue, all that area. It's just a... like a hot spot for these things. Nobody knows quite what they are, whether it's natural phenomena or whether it actually is something.
Yeah, it was
you know.
Just strange. And the lady in Chowall Lane post office, who runs the post office, she was going home to Warrington up the M62, and she saw it, you know, the same. She gave the same description.
Yeah, that's funny you should mention that, because there have been a few cases over the motorway there, the M62, and also the M57, distracting the motorists. And that, so I'll have to try and plot these all on a map and see if there's any particular...
yeah, it was just very strange.
Yeah.
Okay, Val, thanks very much, love.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, bye-bye.
Okay, and Tom, you've still got to explore the ghostly text message. But before that, Tom wants information. Does anybody recall a gruesome murder case in the Binns Road area of Liverpool near Edge Lane, where a murderer was caught by a huge bloodstain that appeared on his living room ceiling? Tom thinks it was in the 1950s. And does anybody know of an illuminated tram that travelled around Liverpool in the 1950s? Because Tom is investigating sightings of a luminous tram that's been seen on Smithdown Road. And does anybody recall a case a few years ago in which a puma was seen prowling around the 13th hole of the Wirral Ladies Golf Club in Bidston Road? And can anybody remember a UFO sighting in the late 60s in which a silvery globe was seen on three consecutive nights hanging in the sky over Liverpool towards the north? And the authorities said it was a satellite, but the same week a similar UFO was seen by dockers in broad daylight over Herculaneum Dock. Can you help us with any of those while Tom frightens us about going on our computers with a... ghostly text messages.
Yeah, very quickly, Bill. It started in Preston, this phenomenon. It's some people getting text messages from somebody called Collie. I haven't got a clue how it's spelled. Sometimes it's C-O-L-L and with a Y or with two ones and so on. And it says things like, Kelly died today. One woman, we got one there. Carol dies today. And that day, my sister died at a blood clot. She was only in her late 40s. And she's just going to tell her at that time she got it. Lots of these accounts going through it, it seems to predict things. Whether it's just a random thing, you could send out mass text now, couldn't you? Say, John dies tonight or something. But these seem to be particular names. So I'm going to research a little bit more deeper for next time when I come on. I don't want to scare everyone from using the mobile, but I don't know how it's actually, whether it's a trick, which is a very bad dark humour trick if it is, or whether there is something supernatural, but... I'm getting lots of reports of this thing with a text message, and it seems to predict sorts of future tragedies, members of families dying, and or whether it's just a joke, maybe just somebody randomly sending it off. You can get mass text machines now that just text everyone for advertising.
But, Tom and I were actually talking the week before last about the case of Radio Merseyside in Paradise Street when Wally and I were on the air, and I got a phone call of somebody, and Wally come in and said, Adam Faith's died.
That's right.
Adam Faith's died. Yeah. And I said, oh, has he? I said, well, he said, we just had somebody on the phone now, Adam Faith's died. I said, well, we better confirm it first.
That's right.
Which we did. We got on to Adam Faith's manager, and he wasn't. He was alive and well.
Yeah.
until the day after when he died.
That's right. It was in the Echo. You said it was like something at the Twilight Zone.
It was something at the Twilight Zone. Somebody phoned us up, told us Adam Faith was dead. He wasn't. And then 24 hours later, he died.
Yeah. It's just unexplainable.
That was amazing, that. Inexplicable. Thanks, Tom. I'll see you in 2 weeks' time.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks a lot, mate. Time for the very latest sport. Here's Ian Kennedy.